Listen up, all you all-day family members. Welcome into another show. It's Brett. It's Lofa. We're talking Seahawks and looking towards this big matchup with the Giants coming up on Sunday, coming off the first loss of the season in Detroit to the Detroit Lions and the NFL referees. It's hard to play both of them at the same time.
Yeah, brother, you're right. It's exciting because I want to see how the boys are going to respond, right? Like we said, no one's had us here at 3-1, top of the division, so I'm still very excited about where we're at after 1 month of play. But, you know, now everything, it's a different mood in that locker room after a loss, and we've talked about that, man. Yeah. It's just you can't wait to get to that next game, and so we got that opportunity coming. I'm excited for that.
There's so much to do on this episode. We're going to look at this upcoming matchup with the Giants. We've got Pat Leonard from the Daily News in New York, a real member of the New York media, joining us, Lofa, to give us the Giants' perspective. We've also got Seahawks tight end Brady Russell sitting down with us. And, of course, we'll look around the league and tell you everything you need to know from the world of sports and the world of the NFL. But jumping right into it here, they have to have a bit of a bad taste in their mouth after the Detroit Lions game. Surprisingly to me, Seahawks fans aren't as upset with that loss as I think they kind of, not that they should be upset, but they're just taking it a little lighter than I've ever seen in my entire history of being a Seahawks fan. So they better take care of business against the Giants. Otherwise, I feel like it will go the other way with the fandom. But have you noticed that people don't seem to be very upset, or I don't even know how to phrase it, but.
Well, I feel like maybe it's because they're listening to us and our positivity around here, because we're always the silver lining, right? And yeah, being number one, right, is always good. And yeah, I think I'm probably more mad at the fans than I am the team, because the fans are not upset. And every other time we've come out with wins, and yeah, we still have stuff to complain about. But here, dude, now we have a loss. They're like, I feel okay.
That's what I'm saying. And people, you guys got to comment below and tell me what's happening here. We'll go back and read. I want your feedback. Like, in the three wins that the Seahawks had leading up to that game, people were more upset after those wins and thinking that the sky was going to then fall. Then they did lose in Detroit, and everyone's like, ah, it's not that big a deal. You can't play the referees also. It's still strange to me, because the Lions are seemingly the first real team we played. The whole narrative was that we hadn't played anyone real. Then we finally did. Then we lost, and no one really seems to care.
That's where I was going, is that they, you know, you can only play who's on your schedule, right? And then I think it was the number of injuries, and people's expectations probably had a little bit of a dip, you know. But I'm happy that everyone's happy for some reason.
I don't know. It feels weird to me. I'm a little uncomfortable with it, to be honest. It doesn't feel like my normal Seahawks fans and family that I'm usually surrounded with. But whatever, we'll try to get past it. I want to talk. What's that T-shirt you have behind you? Look at that.
I'm leaning the wrong way again.
What's your background today? Oh, is that some all day merch?
You like that?
Oh, is that a tease for what's to come?
It is a T-shirt. And then there's Brett right there.
Yeah, more info on that coming soon, but some brand new all-day merch on the way, everybody. Okay, so then let's look at this matchup with the Giants then, because the Giants are one of the worst teams in the NFL right now through the first 4 weeks. Even though they had a chance to win that Cowboys game, the Cowboys don't look great either. So that was kind of a matchup of two teams, like which one was going to lose it, really. They got to just destroy the Giants. They got to take care of business. I mean, let's shut them out. Like, what do you need to see from this game?
I love what you're talking about. Shut them out with, you know, after giving up 42. I mean, I know the boys are going to be pissed off, but shut them out. It's hard to shut anybody out in the NFL. But, I know they're going to come out and give their best shot. And I don't think the Giants offensively, defensively, or special teams have enough firepower or depth to withstand what we have. And I'm telling you, defensively, if that's where we're going for the shutout, just a couple turnovers, and we win that game last week, but we start destroying teams. And I think that's something we really have to focus on, because it's a mindset, much like we've talked about, you know, third down, that's a mindset, getting off the field. So the turnovers, they come in bunches, as they say, and so I'm looking for them this week.
The thing is that if we win this game, which we're supposed to, and even if we win it handily and just, you know, smack them around, it's still another non-team, though, that you would have beat. And then coming in right afterwards is the Niners, which is just like Detroit, sort of a team. And so even winning this one is not going to get you the respect you're looking for from around the league. And so I don't know. It's just a weird position we find ourselves in right now.
No, I love that. You know, yeah, don't give us any respect. I think that's what Mike McDonald and the whole team, you know, really is they love to fly under the radar and thrive off of this. And just, yeah, go ahead. Keep saying we're not playing anybody or we're beating who we should. And, you know, we'll let Thursday take care of Thursday. That is like probably my only concern with, you know, maybe players looking ahead. But I don't, the way they play and just everything and the leadership that McDonald's display, I don't think we have that kind of problem, you know, to worry about. I think they'll be ready, but it's take care of business first or it doesn't matter, right? And so then when you get down the road and you look up and we only got like two losses, you know, 8-2 or, you know, 9-2, like you can't say we haven't played anybody.
Well, I can.
I think I will. It just might not be true.
Seahawks are favored in the game. You guys can place wagers with our friends Bet Online. Use their mobile app. Just search Bet Online in any app store, whatever system you're using, or go to their website, betonline.ag. They are the world's most trusted betting platform and your number one source for everything football. They also have a $200,000 mega contest. You pick five games against the spread every week for a chance to win weekly prizes and your share of $200,000. Bet Online, where the game starts. If you were a betting man on this one, Lofa, is Geno Smith going to set a new career high in passing yards this week, backing up what he did last week in Detroit?
Yeah. I mean, their defense is depleted. They got, you know, a lot of injuries themselves. They gave up 125 rating to Dak, a couple touchdowns. And I think every other quarterback, they're averaging 106 rating against them. And I know Geno only was 85 last week, but for almost 400 yards, I think he keeps the train rolling. And it's going to be, I like that. I like those odds.
How about the offensive line, which, again, so far this year has been offensive? And I'm going to keep using that joke for as long as they are. Oh my God. Producer Katie's over it, but
yeah.
I'm a dad. It's appropriate. Sure. Seahawks fans are calling for Haynes, the rookie, to get in there and get some more playing time. He's looking solid when he's in there. Should he be in there more often?
You know, this is outside my area of expertise as I was a linebacker, but yeah, he presents problems in terms of good problems when you have him on offense. He can get up to the second level. He's a great athlete. And by second level, I mean any, you know, linebacker or safety, you know, he'll handle business on the double team, chip, and then go straight up and just maul those guys. He is a finisher, like finishing blocks, dumping people out. And that's the attitude and mindset you need in the trenches. So does he deserve to start? I mean, the numbers will tell in terms of production when he's in. And I think, you know, as they look closer at that as a self-scout, coaches do that. And remember, Pete used to always put up the numbers, right? Whether it was tackles, you know, sacks, interceptions, like, and you just see certain guys climb that ladder and then get more opportunities. So pleasantly surprised with the rookie. And, you know, if the numbers are there, then, yeah, I think he'll earn that opportunity.
as I look at the injury report here, if I subtract the guys that are FPs, so full participants, they're on the list, but they're fully participating. But even if you subtract those guys, there's 13 more guys that are on here that are either listed as LPs, which means limited, or DNPs, did not participate. Murphy, Dodson, Hankins, Maffei, Farrell Brown, Noah Fant, the two tight ends. Oh, and then Brady Russell's also on here. That's three.
No.
Tyler Lockett, Jerome Baker, Julian Love, Chenna's still on there, Leonard Williams, and Cameron Young. I think I read them all. What's it like? I mean, have you ever been a part of a team with this many injuries? And then what's it like going into games with guys that are the backups?
Yeah, I'm not going to be honest. It's a little unsettling, you know. These are your brothers. You hope that they all are in health. But once you take that first snap of padded practice, nobody's 100%. You just tough through it. 2008, Holmgren's last year. I think we had like a league record, not just in injuries, but like guys on injured reserve, like means that they are done. And I think it was something like 17 or 18 guys. Has had like, I think it was 16 games. I think he had 14 or 15 different combination of starting offensive lines.
Yeah.
That's some getting used to now.
Like, not going to work.
And you don't have time, right? So, but I expect him to make, you know, the right adjustments, and good for AJ Barner. That's the only thing I heard positively out of there was he's the only one that's not injured in the tight end room.
He's the only one ready to go. Yeah. Is there any concern about this being a trap game? And as a former player, are trap games a real thing?
I would like to believe they're not real, you know, but does it happen? Absolutely, it happens. And I couldn't tell you if this is a trap game, not being in that locker room, but just with the way they play, and, you know, hearing McDonald and all these coaches talk, I don't think they would ever let their guard down. You can't in this league. Any given Sunday is literally, that's a real term. Like, and I remember 2010, we were struggling, and then we went on the road to Chicago. They were about to have their bye week, and we beat them like 24. Hester almost took one back to like tie it up, but it came down to an onside kick. And, you know, I remember all the reporters and media is just like, oh man, Chicago fell into a trap game. And like, you know, we felt that disrespectful. We're still a bunch of pros over here, but if that's how they felt, that's how they felt, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't get caught looking past this one, but it is a division rival coming up next. And so we just got to take care of business in this one. I'm honestly not nervous. Like in years past, I would have said, oh, this one's got me scared and all that. I'm honestly not. I feel confident in this team because of the things that you said. Watching McDonald in his press conference, you know, they gave up all those points to Detroit no matter who was on the field. He can't be happy with that. I hopefully he hasn't slept a wink. He's just been up planning and scheming and trying to figure out how to make this shutout happen on Sunday.
See, partner, that's why I'm nervous, because every time you say you're not nervous.
Is that what happens?
You know, I'm attuned to trends, and much like you always brought up Colt McCoy and not nervous and teams we should beat, not nervous. That scares me.
Okay, then I'm super nervous now for this one. There you go. I'm back to my standard operating procedure as a Seahawk fan. How can we beat these Giants with Drew Lock on the other sideline? Is he giving them all of our secrets?
No, because no,
it was a different.
No. Game. Yeah, exactly. There you go. See, I love it. I love that you are aware of that. No. But we love Drew. Hope he's all right. I know he went through a little bit of an injury with like a hip or something. So see, even Drew's on the injury report, man. Like everyone's injured. It's a crazy year. I'll say that much.
What's it like getting ready for these games on a short week?
Oh, it's hell. Like, and if you thought it was bad as a player, try being a coach. Most of the guys just slept in the office. And this one isn't as short as the one that we'll talk about, you know, next week, but, everything, you know, just congested, or you're trying to get it all done. It time is of the essence. And so I really like the walkthrough tempo. I feel like guys learn more in those kind of practices. Like, if I were ever a head coach, I would always make practice first, like when we do go pads, because like usually this is how it goes. They give you the walkthrough, which is like a pop quiz to the test, which is practice. And they always do it that way. I would do it the other way, right? Because I'll tell you the one thing that always got me as a player, as much as I studied, took home film, everything. If we had the practice first and I messed something up in practice, I would never forget it. Like years later, I remember practice plays that I messed up on. Wow. And I think everyone goes on autopilot, if you go walk through first and then go practice in the afternoon, it's like, okay, well, he better get it the second time around. But no, it's that feeling of embarrassment, messing up on a play and letting your brothers down, that kind of, you know, always stays there so that you're always paying attention. That's what I would do.
I don't know if you know, but DK Metcalf has had 100-yard games last three games, first time in his career. Does he do it again? Do we go 4 in a row?
Yeah, the streak continues, brother. They're going to have their hands full, you know, with not just DK, but Lockett and JSN. It's we got one of the best wide receiving cores in the NFL. But it's just cool to see DK fully utilizing his talents. And this, you know, I don't put this on DK or even other coaching staff. It's just like guys got to find their rhythm. And I feel like the chemistry between him and Geno has reached that level. There's a trust level that has to be there for the receiver and the quarterback. And it's special what we're watching right now. It's amazing. It's everything that we've wanted, right? Everything. You're like, can we just send him on go routes and show off that speed?
Yeah, totally.
It's happening.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it finally we seem like we have a coordinator and the coaching staff that wants to use the players that they have for the specific things that individual player is, you know, good at or seemingly doing the thing that we all think they're supposed to do. Because in the past, people have come in and then it's like they don't even throw them the ball. So as a fan, it's nice to finally see it going to the places that I kind of think it should be going.
Right. And I mean, that's kind of a credit to your boy Grubb.
Yeah.
You were big on him coming up here and, you know, everybody had their concerns, college pro game, but the way he's getting him the ball, even the routes, when everybody's like, oh, he can only run these minutes, the comeback that Geno threw and he toe tapped like 20 yards, that thing was a thing of beauty. And that was something that everyone previously believed he didn't have in his repertoire of routes. And so, mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, cool. Like this Grubbs put full faith in the DK as a complete receiver, not just, okay, catch the hitch and go or take off and go. Right. It's cool to see.
Yeah. Let's get a Giants perspective on this thing and bring in Pat Leonard from the New York media. I don't know why. I can't stop doing it. I just can't.
It's a good accent, but it reminds me of gangs in New York. Right.
Butcher. Goodfellas or something.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh, that's a compliment. Hey, speaking of movies, Katie and I are in an animated movie that comes out this weekend.
And you never told me.
Well, we actually did this a long time ago. I think it was during the pandemic. We were, you know, this project was brought to us and we did our voices on it because we have all the recording equipment around here, sent it in. Every actor, actress in it just recorded themselves, sent it in. And then it was all compiled into this beautiful animated feature. It's called Unicorn Boy. And it drops on Friday. You can watch it video on demand. You can rent it, you know, from any of the streamers. It stars myself, producer Katie LeClaire. It stars Patton Oswalt. Maybe you've heard of him. Maria Bamford, Michelle Trachtenberg, our friend Bo Murchoff is in it. It's produced by our really good friend Neil Gargiulo and created by Maddie Keel, who's an animator that you're going to hear their name. I mean, just incredible. Like, did it all themselves, 165,000 cells of animation to make up this one movie.
That sounds like it's pretty epic.
Yeah, it's really great. It's a story about finding yourself, and it takes place a bit in a fantasy land and then also in the real world, and the animation is just beautiful. It looks watercolored, and the score is incredible. So check it out there, everybody. Unicorn Boy coming this weekend. And then, hey, speaking of seats and tickets and, you know, all that kind of stuff, epicseats.com, everybody. We have our giveaway because the Giants game is a home game. All you got to do is sign up for our email list. There's a link below this here video. Click on that, submit your email to us, and we'll put you into pretty much all of our giveaways, but definitely this Epic Seats one, and you can win tickets from us. Now let's get Pat Leonard on the phone. All I was going to say, Pat, is nobody in Seattle is afraid of this Giants team, and everybody's basically chalking this one up as a W already. Tell us why we're wrong, or do you agree with us?
So I do agree with you. I think Seattle wins and covers in this game, but I would say the last two meetings they've had have been much closer later in the game, I think, than the final scores show, right? So like last year, that game was 14-3 late third quarter. If the Giants don't throw that pick six there, it's going to be 14-10 going into the fourth in the Giants home stadium. And then 2 years ago in Seattle, that game was 13-13 with 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So if you're a Giants fan, that's the silver lining of how this could turn possibly. But to your point, the Giants have only scored one total touchdown in those two games. The Seahawks, I believe, have, 16 sacks in the two games combined. Mm-hmm. And the turnover battle, which is the one I'm continuing to watch because the Seahawks and Giants are both minus in the turnover differential right now. It's 6-1 in favor of the Seahawks right now in this matchup over the last couple of years. So, you know, I think from the Giants standpoint, their offensive line looks so far like it won't be the sieve that it was last season when the Seahawks had 11 sacks here. But, you know, as we've outlined just now, even if they're protecting Daniel Jones, they've really had a hard time getting in the end zone against the Seahawks in general the last couple of years. And also this season, 15 points a game. They only have 15 total points in the second half of all four of their games combined. Just tough sledding for a Giants team. And as I come to you guys right now off the practice field, Malik Nabers, even off of the long weekend with the extra week, still in the concussion protocol. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy, everybody, and you know, I'm sure this is already something you've heard and it's something we'll continue to talk about in this conversation, but he leads the NFL in targets. His target share with the Giants is insane. It's 52 targets of the team's 145 total. So Nico Collins is second with the Texans with 43. And that's pretty much 36% of the Giants' target share in the passing game. So without him, what does their offense really look like?
That was going to be my first question, was about Nabers, not only just because of the threat he is with the Giants, but because of his production so far on the Seattle Sea Chickens, which is my fantasy team. he's been racking up the points for me this year. But so do we think he's going to be out for this game? What's his status right now?
Is this for Seahawks fans or for your fantasy team's purposes?
A little bit of both, I suppose.
Yeah. Hey, it's just as important for both. Let's go. Let's be honest here. So I think at this point, so we saw Darius Slayton clear the concussion protocol with the Giants. He was concussed in the, I think it was the Washington game. And then he cleared by the time the Cleveland game happened, like 7 days later. Typically what you see when we're watching the Giants players go through that protocol is today should have been the day that we saw Nabers out there kind of on the side, you know, jogging, getting some cardio in that we can see. So then Thursday becomes a limited practice. Friday becomes a full. He gets cleared, flies to Seattle and plays. That's the typical trajectory. Now, he could very well be on a treadmill inside doing the same thing and they're just not airing it out in front of us. I don't know that at this moment. I will say, though, Brian Daboll did tell us, Brett, that Devin Singletary, their running back who has a groin injury, is not practicing today. He told us, though, he volunteered the information. Singletary was running on Monday himself, and we did see him in uniform today on the side working with a trainer. So that looks like he, for example, is further along than what Nabers is. I frankly, I think at this moment it's trending towards him not playing.
Wow. The neighbors, it was interesting because it's a sideline catch. He's doing a toe tap, you know. I mean, the catch would have been just incredible if he would have held on, but just went kind of face first into the turf. And then they were on him immediately and looked pretty concerned. It looked like it was one of those things that didn't like look as bad as then the reaction sort of was. And obviously we don't want to speculate or get, you know, too far into it, but in a way where we don't know what I'm talking about, but
it
looked weird. Yeah.
I think you're making good points. Real quick to clarify, look to me like when he hit his face on the ground, he stopped moving completely. So yeah. No one has told me that, but it almost looked like he might have been out for a second. Now, we haven't interviewed him yet. I can tell you after the game, we were interviewing Brian Burns, and neighbors came back into the locker room to get something from his locker. We weren't allowed to interview him. He's in the protocol. Brian Burns thought he was going to get a nice sound bite going into the long weekend for the Giants, and he yelled across, hey, Malik, you all right? And neighbors turned around and said, no. So that should tell you right there about what it is versus what it looked like.
Yeah. Well, he just wasn't able to brace himself because he's going for the catch, you know, so his arms are basically down at his waist. He just goes right face first into the turf, which, I mean, isn't as soft as I think we all think it is, obviously. So Lofa, right? Lofa knows. He's been out there.
I'm a brain injury expert, actually. These things happen. Like usually even a whiplash or like, I remember I got a knee to the head and like I laid out for a tackle, Forte broke the tackle and, I go to press up and run and I just get like a knee to the head and I get up, take two more steps and fall down. And this was one that I easily played through, right? And so, like when we went back and watched the film, I didn't even remember that happening at the time. I only remember because I watched the film the next day. But yeah, it's crazy. And then you got to make sure you're fully recovered before you come back out. Like, so sensitivity to light, the loud noises, which, you know, the 12s get pretty loud up here. So be ready, brother. But yeah, it's just you want to take precaution with this is what they're definitely going to do. And the league's doing a better job with the protocol.
Well, if he can't go, then Pat, who are they going to throw it to?
So the guy right now who's been in Chateau Bow Wow, who looks like he might be out of the doghouse for this game, is Jalen Hyatt. He is the Biletnikoff Award winner a couple years ago with Tennessee. And I guess the best way to summarize it would be, it seems like the rest of the league's opinion of him or scouting report of him might be accurate, which is one trick pony down the field burner, but underneath the full route tree, learning those concepts, being able to execute at a high level consistently is not something he has shown the Giants. Now, they traded up to get him in the third round a couple of years ago. They gave up a fourth to move up pretty high to get him. But he just hasn't played. He actually yelled out during a practice late in August that if they weren't going to use him, they should just trade him. And that was about a week ago, was kind of clean up on aisle four for the Giants in the locker room. But he still hasn't played a lot. So it would be Darius Slayton, Wandale Robinson, and Jalen Hyatt would be the three featured. Wandale Robinson and Neighbors, they're the two guys far and away been targeted more than any other Giants receiver, but Robinson's mainly underneath. And so that catch and run element that Neighbors provides, a lot of it would be put on number 17, who is, he's really more of a kind of a gadget player than a downfield threat.
Chateau Bow Wow is also the name of my new Husky podcast.
That was a good one.
I love it. Covering the NHL. That always came up in the NHL when guys were healthy scratches. Chateau Bow Wow.
There you go. What about defensively? Leonard Williams playing against his old team, but the Giants bringing your defense in here against Geno. How do you guys feel going against the number one passer in the league, or at least the guy who's thrown for the most yards?
I love Geno, first of all. I mean, every time I get a chance, like when the Giants play the Seahawks, I go to the Seahawks interviews instead of the Giants. I love seeing him. I love listening to him. And I love watching how happy he is and how refreshed he is being in that organization, in that city, and fully realizing his potential. You know, you see guys now like Sam Darnold getting a second chance, Baker Mayfield, guys like this. But Geno, Geno's the one, you know, he, you know, especially with not just what happened with the Jets, but with the whole Eli Manning fiasco. And, you know, the quiet part out loud was that they put the right quarterback in that time. He was playing better in practice than Eli Manning at that point. That's why it happened.
Wow.
But getting fired up, defending my guy. But, you know, I think the Giants, the way they look at Geno Smith is they understand what you just said, which is that he will carve you up. You know, like he is that level of a quarterback. In fact, here in the NFC East and, you know, in the NFL in general, like Jalen Hurts, for example, look at what he's not able to do right now for the Eagles as far as extending and making passing plays down the field, protecting the ball, not turning it over at a high rate while making those explosive plays, not necessarily obviously having full trust of both play caller and teammates. All of those things are what Geno is doing in Seattle. Like watching that Monday night game, I was not shocked, but I thought it really stood out to me how often he made a play. In other words, moved off his spot, gets outside the pocket, keeps his eyes downfield, completes a pass for 11 yards, 12 yards, 15 yards, 8 yards. And I, frankly, I think this game comes down to health on Seattle's side, because as long as they have, you know, Walker in the backfield, DK and Lockett and Smith and Jigba on the field playing receiver, and some of these defensive linemen come back, I think Seattle score. I mean, they're basically averaging 10 points more a game than the Giants are right now. So I think it's a pick your poison type day for Geno Smith against the Giants, because they have struggled both stopping the run and stopping the pass. But Brett, sorry to be long winded here, but the Giants passing defense right now is scary. And if you guys watch that Hard Knocks, there was a scene when Joe Shane, the general manager of the Giants, made a joke to their defensive coordinator. He said, if we trade for Brian Burns, I guess I'll play corner for us. Well, basically that's what's happening. He has to play corner for them. And that those are the results.
Oh, so you don't mean scary in a way where we should be scared of it. Oh, you mean you guys are scared of it.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. I mean that the Giants don't have a corner that you're not going to throw at.
Man. Okay, so then, Lofa, is there anything that I should be worried about?
That just makes me – no, we should. You should always have caution going in, you know, but I know we're going to practice hard because we just came off our first loss. So, you know, I know they're pissed off and they're going to be ready to go. I don't know if Leonard's going to make this one or if Julian Love. By the way, I want to say a shout-out, Pat, to you and the Giants for giving us two of your best players and best leaders.
I guess I might have jumped the gun on that one with Leonard playing against his old team. The report's not even out yet.
So, but yeah, just we were down 5 starters last week, no excuses, and then we lost Julian Love. So I think I'd take more caution into this game rather than, you know, just saying it's going to be a rollover. And I just hope we're not looking ahead to the Thursday night matchup against the Niners. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's was it Colt McCoy that came in to Lumen a couple of years ago, like before the two games that Pat referenced?
It's always Colt McCoy.
There he is again, right? So like, I wouldn't be surprised if they sign him just for this week, even just as a good luck charm, because the guy's like undefeated against us.
But that's right.
But yeah, concerns. Okay, maybe Hyatt just has the speed, but it's a one trick pony. You said that's a damn good trick though. He can fly, and then you got Wandale underneath doing the short intermediate routes. So. We will not take the Giants lately. And, you know, I think we'll be ready for this game, Brett, to tell you the truth on how I feel about it.
Hey, Pat, who scares you more, DK or K-9?
K-9 for sure. And that's nothing against DK. I mean, I think, you know, against this secondary, we know Metcalf could, you know, he could go for a 75 yard touchdown, the blink of an eye, and change this game. But the Giants, you know, tackling, especially in the outsides, again, the corners, the kind of this edge setting, like Brian Burns, the way the Giants can wreck a game is their pass rush. Brian Burns, Dexter Lawrence, Kayvon Thibodeau, if they get going, if the Seahawks are in obvious passing situations. But K-9 scares me because, you know, he's an effective runner. He's an effective pass catcher, and he gets outside, gets in space. He makes everybody miss. So a Giants team that already kind of struggles there on the fringes and on the edge setting. I think, you know, the Giants recipe, as Loaf is saying, the Giants do have some elements to keep an eye on, and they're going to try to, even though they can't run the ball, they did ball control with their passing game against Dallas last Thursday, even without a running game. So they're going to try to hold the ball on offense, keep their defense off the field, and make it work. The reason K9 is scary, though, for Seattle is as explosive as Geno's been, if Seattle wants to counter that with their running game and with giving the ball to Kenneth Walker, like, we know they can do it. And I don't think the Giants have the pedigree in their run stopping to be able to get them out of it. So, you know, I think that's what makes them kind of 360 degrees dynamic as an offense, not just with how Geno's playing.
The NFC East is kind of wild right now. I mean, this Cowboys Giants game, I was watching it. I was like, man, is this just a game of like which team is worse, or is one of these teams going to take this thing? Because both of them had a chance to win it there at the end. And then whatever's going on with Philadelphia, and then you got the Commanders and Jaden Daniels just, you know, seemingly going to run away with this thing possibly.
Yeah, it's really interesting because even the Washington, obviously, with an explosive offense nowadays, you're going to be competitive in any game. They do have one of the worst defenses in the league, which is kind of the quiet part that I'm curious whether the offense ever slows down and they lose a bunch of games in a row just because they're really not very good defensively. But, you know, it's funny here in New York, it's almost curiosity of which team's going to join the Giants in the basement. You know, you have Philadelphia where Nick Sirianni is under more fire than any of the other coaches. Like, as much as Daboll's under fire and McCarthy's under fire, Sirianni is just getting bludgeoned in Philadelphia. They're two and two. But, you know, they had a lot of injuries, no show in Tampa. Everybody kind of knows that they spent a week and a half deciding whether or not to bring him back as the head coach before ultimately bringing him back. And they have a lot of roster issues. In Dallas, high-end talent, but their depth is not as good. And McCarthy continues to be this guy who, you know, like kicking that really long field goal and missing and giving the Giants a chance at a Hail Mary at the end on Thursday. It's like, what are we doing? But, you know, the Giants have really – this is year three for Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. And this is supposed to be the year that, even if they don't win the division, that they get a foothold on a foundation of what they want to be. And then they can keep stacking on top of it. And that's what's so discouraging about the lack of results. Because the Cowboys and the Eagles both look like they're kind of down, even though they're at 500 right now. So if the Giants can't take advantage now, when do they? And of course, gets rubbed in their face a little bit that they were so heavily in the market for a quarterback this spring. They didn't have the pick to really get the guy. And then to watch Jaden Daniels and what he's doing so far in Washington.
We got to predict the scores here. Our sponsor, Simply Seattle, they furnish the score prediction challenge each week. I think this week it's up to $100, the gift card you could win if you nail the score prediction. Find our post on Instagram, comment what you think the final score will be, and if you nail it, we'll throw you in the hat, pull out a winner. Pat, what's the score going to be?
I'll go 31-12 Seahawks. I'll say the Giants kick a couple field goals. They score one touchdown, go for two, don't get it. I think the Giants' path to winning this game and being in this game is scoring a defensive or special teams touchdown. Alofa made a good point about if the Seahawks are down all of these defensive starters, right? Like all the guys on Monday night plus Julian Love. If that's the case, then I would tweak it to be a little bit of a closer game. But I think if they get back, I don't know if you guys know who they're getting back, who they're not, but if they get a couple of those pass rushers back and players on defense, I like the Seahawks to run away with it.
No, I wish they would give us that kind of inside information, but no, there's no way they're going to tell me, me and my mouth, anything. Lofa, what do you got?
Yeah, I think this offense, you know, not just Geno. I've been on Geno bandwagon since the day he took the first snap. Brother. And so you were just, you know, it was music to my ears the way you were talking about him. I think he stays hot and continues to make all the great plays. And so, and we even had the run game going last week. We just fell behind by two scores and had to just preserve some clock, which is why. But we had 7 yards of carry with almost every running back. And that's a good sign, right? So yep. I'm going to say we just got a 40 burger put on us. We're going to put up a 40 burger. So give me 41 to 17.
Wow.
Like it.
41 to 17.
Wow. Oh, yeah. We're coming back with vengeance.
Wow. I like that. I actually think, well, I don't even know why I think this. I'm just going on a hunch here. I just think that after we scored a lot of points, maybe we don't score as many this week. If guys are still out on the defense, we saw what happened in Detroit. It's not to say that it'll be that kind of scoring, but I think the Giants could score a little bit. I'm going to just say we win this one 21-14. That's the cleanest score I've ever given on this show, and that's because I've never nailed the score prediction. So we'll go with just a very normal football score. However, I do think that this score that I'm saying won't reflect the way the game feels. However, I think it'll feel like a blowout, just might not necessarily be on the scoreboard when it's all said and done. Thanks to Simply Seattle for furnishing that one. And Pat, like, thanks for being here, man. The Talking Ball podcast, everything you're doing over there with the daily news and all that. I want to get you out here on this though, because we usually don't have media members here on the show, and but we talk about the media all the time. Like, for you guys and the job that you do, and being in the locker rooms and all that stuff. Like, you're in New York too. You're in the media in New York. Like, just what goes into asking a good question when you get into those rooms and you get in front of these guys?
That's a good question. I think, I heard what Lova was saying earlier about you have to sound like somebody who, first of all, cares about the person you're talking to, in my opinion. And that comes with conversations you've had prior. In other words, if I went to Lova's locker only when I needed something, and I never said hi, never talked to him, never treated him like a person, I think that is an important part of then when it's time to ask the hard question or the critical question or to do your job in the professional manner. I think that relationship matters there, and nobody sees that, but I think that's an important part of it. I think the way you ask a question, typically I think players, coaches, general managers are smart enough to know when they listen to what you're asking, whether you did the research and your homework and you know what you're talking about or not. Also, I think it's important to remember very, very consistently that you don't know as much as the person you're talking to about what you're asking them about, right? So, like, I always tell guys, if I ever write or say something that is way off base, or I give credit where it doesn't belong or blame where it doesn't belong, please correct me and explain that to me. Ask a question, tell me why. Right. Because I think it all comes back to just being genuine and transparent. You also have to remember, though, like you said, being in the media and being a public figure, but also being in New York, you have to remember that what you say and do and talk about and write carries a little, you know, it can carry pretty far. So, for example, when I asked Brian Daboll after their loss against Washington if he was concerned about his job security, and he stared a hole through my soul and it went viral. And I was catching a lot of heat, indirect and direct, about why the heck is he asking that question? He's trying to get a coach fired, all that. I thought very hard about that, you know, and did a lot of reporting to inform that was a necessary question at that point. And I would have never asked it otherwise. But you have to recognize that it's not just about this question deserves to be asked. It's also, is it fair to the person you're asking? And also, you know, can you justify it? Can you defend it with the facts and information that you have? And that's kind of a lot of different questions and answers. But I think it really just comes down to thinking about it as a human being and treating the people that you're talking to and asking questions like human beings.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. Thank you for your time. Thanks for answering the question, too. Yeah, well said. Very, very well said. Thanks, Pat.